Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting, her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. A very warm welcome. If you are curious about writing as a spiritual practice, you're going to enjoy today's guest, Sherry Mundell, an award-winning author, mother, and activist. And Sherry is here to talk about her new book, The Kabbalah of Writing, Mystical Practices for Inspiration and Creativity, and share with us insights on writing from all her years of teaching and being an author herself. Welcome, Sherry, to Voice Rising.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's good to have you. You do have this wonderful new book. You have many, many books out on the market, but this new book is very special for those of us who do write or dabble in writing or have always dreamed of writing. The new book, The Kabbalah of Writing, is a very different kind of guide, I would say. So why did you write this book? What drew you to it?
Well, I wrote it for a lot of reasons. First of all, I've been teaching writing for a long time, and recently I've been working with the same students for over 10 years. So because I had to always come up with new exercises for them, and new readings, I gathered a lot of material. And I've always been interested in the Kabbalah, especially in the Sefirot. When I first came to Israel many years ago, I took a class in the Sefirot, and I was just amazed because they were so comprehensive and also so interesting. And so I thought it would be just a really beautiful partnership between the Sefirot and writing. And so I put the book together. It was actually many years ago. And eventually it was published. So I'm really happy for these ideas to find their way out to the greater world.
Yeah, for so many of us also to learn the beauty of the Kabbalah. You were born in New York. I read you were born and grew up on Long Island, and you graduated from Cornell and did an MA in creative writing. And then you did a lot of teaching in the United States at the University of Maryland and Penn State and wrote for magazines. What brought you to Israel then? I believe Israel now is your home base.
Yeah, well, I've lived here for 27 years with my family. I grew up Jewish in New York, but I had no Jewish education, so I really didn't understand what Judaism was. And I wasn't so interested in it when I was a kid, but then I was teaching college, and in a story we were reading, it mentioned Hanukkah, and I realized I couldn't really explain to my students what Hanukkah was. And I just felt it was such a gap in my knowledge, and eventually I was traveling, and I decided to come to Israel. I had friends here. And once I started learning about Judaism, I was just mesmerized. I had no idea how interesting the religion was, and actually how mystical and how spiritual, and that it talked about other worlds. And also the Hebrew language itself is a very interesting language, and to learn the Bible, to learn the Torah in Hebrew is a different way of learning it, because the words are much richer in the original language.
Yeah. And it's done through oration, correct? I mean, you're speaking a lot. You're singing and speaking. Or is it only reading?
Like in the Torah on Shabbat, that's when the portion of the Torah, the Bible, mm-hmm. the Jewish Bible, is read, and it's always sung. And then also, eventually I became an observant too. So, for example, mm-hmm. on the Sabbath, we're always singing. It's part of like the bench. It's called the benching. It's like the thank you after the meal is the song. And yeah, in the ancient temple, the priests used to sing. So song is definitely a big part of the Jewish religion and many religions.
Many religions, and I've been very lucky to be invited to many beautiful, beautiful events where just such rich, open, full voices, very connected between heaven and earth. So you know that there's a channel that's opening when the, do you say cantor? Is it the one who's...
Yeah, the cantor, but we don't really have cantors here, like in my community.
They have them in Berlin.
In America. Also in Israel, just not where I live. But it's interesting that you use the word channel, because the Sefirot, they also translate as channels, because they're channels between the divine and the world. And they're actually stages of creation. And also, God can be described in terms of the Sefirot, but also human beings can be described in terms of the Sefirot.
So there are 10 spherots, is that correct? 10 channels of the divine creative life force that can be used to support us as human beings to grow, and also support us, and that's where your book is so fascinating, as writers in our own writing practice to develop our own authentic voice. And I found really every chapter is one of the chapters is kindness. And anybody who's ever gone to writing class, normally in school, the last word that might come to our mind is kindness. It might come later with a good teacher at university, but most people start writing with a lot of joy, and then suddenly they feel so criticized. And so there are chapters, or you would probably say the spherots are, one of them is kindness. Then there's things like boundaries, where you really can take these spiritual practices and see how they relate to your writing practice. So it's quite a spiritual path. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. And yeah, I agree with you that there are always people and teachers who can shut us down. And I give the example, I was getting a master's in poetry, and I think I was like 22 or 23, and I was so nervous the first class. I was at Colorado State. I had like never lived outside of New York. I was living in Colorado, and the poetry teacher, I gave in my poem that week, and they all read it, and he looked at me and he said, "This seems like the poem of a 15-year-old girl." And I was devastated. It was such a hurtful comment.
Yes.
And I think that, it's very easy to criticize in a negative way, but to really find the power in somebody's writing and try to help them understand what they're trying to say. I just taught a writing class, 2 hours ago. So lots of times I'll say to my students, just, what were you thinking when you wrote this? What was your intention? And then I'll ask the other students, where do you see the power in this essay? What do you think the heart of this essay is? Like, in order, it builds somebody up to describe what they've done, and I think that hurtful comments, they really can destroy people. So language is very powerful. I mean, that's part of my contention in this book, and it's very important, you know, what we say and how we say it.
Language is so powerful.
But in terms of, in terms of chesed, in terms of kindness, first of all, the sfirot, they alternate. Some are very expansive and some contract. And that parallels the energy of the universe, that we're always, there's always a forward motion and a backward motion, or a motion of order and anarchy. We're always moving in this kind of binary way. But there are also spirit of balance. Mm-hmm. And kindness is a kind of generosity. It's an expansiveness. So it also gives us the opportunity as writers to just let go and to write without judging ourselves. Because I think that's what breaks people as writers, is when they judge themselves before they allow, before they're generous with themselves and just allow that first draft to come out of them.
Right, which is a very different language. If a teacher says, let's be generous today and share our heart. You said the heart of the work, and I had to smile when you said that, because we often say as artists also, it's our body of work, right? So there is a personification. There is really, these poems are extensions of our breath. They're extensions of our heart. They're extensions of our thoughts, right? They're extensions of our emotions. And if we're generous with our gifts also, then we don't have writer's block or stage fright, because we come from a place of sharing our life experiences. And it's a very different place than competition. It comes from a place of communing or being in a community together. And
I love that word communing, because it's like that you're working together, really, even when you're working separately. Because, like, I know as a writer, I'm expressing something, but it's not till somebody has heard it and responded that I'm really satisfied. So there's always that, I think in Hebrew sometimes, that inyan, that idea of communication has communion in it and community. And that's why, for me, I love writing. And because I think for me, and I think a lot of people, it reveals something deeper, and it gives the ability to work with language and with imagery and to really delve into a deeper part of the self, and then also to surprise yourself. Because write that, like, one way I know that my writing is, let's say, successful, is when I find something I didn't know was there. When I arrive somewhere that I hadn't planned on arriving. And so there's that meeting with something greater than the self that's possible.
Yeah. Tell us about being honest in our writing and letting go of all those different layers, maybe of masks, and how creativity begs us to be honest. And talk to us about the authentic voice, what we would call the true voice. What's your take on that as a writer and also of a teacher of writing?
Well, I love something that writer Sarah Manguzzo said. She said that a lot of people think that a voice just appears, but that a voice is actually a product of experience and reading and meeting with people and imagination. So a voice is something we build, I think. But in terms of an authentic voice, I think sometimes it's when we just keep, first of all, sometimes the first draft is the most authentic voice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what, like, for, you know, like, first thoughts, best thoughts. There's something about the rawness and giving yourself permission just to say whatever it is you want to say. And to be vulnerable, because readers love vulnerability. Like, we all love when somebody else admits that they messed up or they weren't perfect or they were weak or they did something that they're sorry about. Like, that touches us as readers because we can identify with it. And I know for myself as a writer, I will write things sometimes I wouldn't tell people, and I'll publish them. But somehow, it's like the blank page is like our best friend, you know, like candy that we can sort of confide to that page in a way that we can't confide even to our closest friends.
Yeah, it is quite magical, and I always say to the singers that I'm coaching that when we confide, when we feel that we have a safe place where we can confide, and that can be a piece of, you know, blank paper, that can be a very good friend who offers us unconditional love, there's a confidence that also comes, because confide and confidence are also next to each other, right? So if we feel safe and our voice has a space to have a home, then there's a beauty of unfolding that happens, where we're not pulling back or not constricting or not resigning, and that's very precious. I think we do say things on the page that we might not say in a room full of people because we're afraid again of being judged. So there you come back to this generosity and the kindness that we need to really be ourselves, right? We're going to take a small break. We're going to think about confidence and confide. Is that what you love?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yes, I love that too. So let's take a small break and everybody ponder on that connection.
Okay,
we can confide, we'll have more confidence.
Yeah, I'm going to pick that up.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Well, Welcome back to Voice Rising. Today I am with the award-winning author, mother, and activist, Sherry Mundell, and we're talking about her new book, The Kabbalah of Writing: Mystical Practices for Inspiration, Creativity. And we were just contemplating the connection between to confide in someone or the page and the confidence that's developed when we're able to have a safe place to confide in, right? You like that one.
I adore that because I think it's really true, this idea of confiding, because it's an intimacy. And I think that's what everybody seeks, is that intimacy to be listened to and to be recognized and to be told that what you're thinking and feeling and who you are is okay. And then you have confidence because you know that who you are has been received. So also, I remember I read an essay by, I think it was Emily Fox Gordon, and she talked about the difference between confession and confiding. And she said that when you confess to somebody, that often it's you're in different levels of power. There's a hierarchy. But when you confide, there's an equality. And so I think that that equality is what brings us that confidence.
I agree. And that the confidence also comes with the, which you can only get with time, with the awareness of where you confide. Because I think that we come back again to kindness. There are times when we confide, and if that person that is across from us is too harsh or too judgmental, then we're destroyed. And if that person welcomes us with unconditional love, then we're forever expanded and healed. And the beauty of the page, of course, is that, or the beauty of your dog or cat or other living beings, is that they can't judge. That, and that's why I think writing is such a powerful spiritual practice, because we can find that safe place. Yeah.
Right.
Sherry, you had a huge turning point in your life. You've had, you know, everybody has had many turning points, but you had a very powerful turning point. It was 2001, and you are a mother, and your son was murdered by terrorists. And share with us a little bit how the writing practice in itself, I can't even imagine, and I don't think anybody even has words to begin what you must have gone through. Was it a complete shutdown? Were you able to turn to the page? How did writing perhaps save you or help you to integrate and emerge and go through such an intense tragedy, and also for your family? How did writing play a role?
Yeah, so my son Kobe, in 2001, he was 13 years old. And we live in Israel, and he cut school, and he went hiking with his friend, Yosef Isran. And they were met by, they were stoned to death with rocks by terrorists. And he was my oldest, and I felt like, you know, I really wanted to die. And in fact, you know, we have a foundation, and I became a pastoral counselor, and we run groups for bereaved mothers, and almost every mother, bereaved mother I have spoken to said, yes, she wanted to die. She wanted to kill herself. I mean, we don't, but you really feel like you want to. And I mean, I never said I was lucky, but we were fortunate because we were surrounded by community. And I had an incident on Kobe's birthday where I ended up figuring out what to do. My friend Kira said, you have to do something on Kobe's birthday. And I didn't know what to do. It was 5 weeks after he was murdered. And I had three other kids after, you know, three other little kids. And we went into Jerusalem, and I did not know what to do for his birthday. And finally, I got the idea to give money to 14 beggars. And the minute I got the idea, we were in a restaurant. A beggar came to us. And then we gave him money, and then we went out on the streets in Jerusalem, and we were running after beggars. So I told my friend Shira what had happened, and she said, you have to write about this.
Yes.
So I wrote about it. I wrote an article about it. And then during that first year, I just had so many mystical incidents, with mostly with birds. And I started writing about Kobe. And I that first year, I could hear his voice in my head. So I wrote about his childhood and just things that had happened with him and what he was like and stories. And then I thought I was just going to write about him. But that year, so many mystical events occurred with birds that I started writing about them. And then actually I learned with a friend, we were learning Kabbalah, and we learned that because also there were bird's nests appeared outside my house, and birds fell down at my feet dead. Birds got stuck on my windshield. Everywhere I went, there were birds. And so we learned in the Kabbalah, it said that God waits to redeem the world in a place called the supernal bird's nest. So once I learned that, I understood that this story was bigger than me and actually was part of Jewish history. But I started writing, and I wrote that for, I mean, I didn't want to go out. I thank God I had other children, and I had a six-year-old who really needed me. And I had a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old and a husband. Mm-hmm. So I didn't function very well, but I definitely wrote. And I wrote, I wouldn't say I wrote through my pain. I wrote from my pain, but also from, like, I felt like I was living a spiritual mystery and that whole year. And that there were all these signs and wonders, and that I had to write about them. And one thing that I think was healing for me, Kobe was killed in a cave. Kobe and Yosef were killed in a cave. And then we had all these events concerning bird's nests. And when I wrote the book, I had a lot of different parts. I think there are 39 just different chapters. And I knew the first section was going to be the cave, but I didn't understand what the second section would be. And eventually I understood that the second section would be the bird's nest. And I understood that they were reverse images, because the cave is closed and it's dark and you can lose your way there. But the bird's nest is open and it's light and it's a place of birth. And once I found that image of the bird's nest, and I ended the book with that, I understood that there was birth available, not that I had another baby, but that there were possibilities and a sense of hope. I think that the writing gave me a sense of hope and also tied me to a bigger story, so that it wasn't just my personal story or a national story. It became a spiritual story for me.
Yeah. I always love birds so much that one of the things that I love about birds is that they sit in the darkness and they usher in the dawn, right? They have the courage to use their voice to guide us into the light. I mean, I always am amazed. In Berlin today, it was snowing and cold, and yet the birds were sitting there singing and not complaining and seen by many as these messengers between heaven and the ground, right? The heaven and earth. Really, really powerful. I mean, powerful. I love that image that you gave of the cave and the nest. The nest also being, the place of birth, and also this nurturing home. It's very, very beautiful. So you ended up writing a book. I think it's The Blessing of a Broken Heart. Correct?
And
and now this was a while back, and now you have a beautiful foundation dedicated to the legacy of Kobe, and also to support so many people to heal from and have a place where they can feel at home. What would you say when now looking at this book in particular? Because I think it's really a book, it has nothing, well, for me. I mean, of course, if you're coming from Judaism and the Jewish tradition, but I am not, and I was very happy and enthralled to read this book because of the wisdom that is contained in these 10 sifrats. Huh? What would you say is...
I forgot how to say it. Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. I forgot. Yeah. You can say however you want it. Yeah.
I read it sometimes. I mean, I'll learn Hebrew, if not in this life, in the next life. What makes this book so unique, especially for people maybe that have never come in contact with the Kabbalah, or they want to just find a new approach to finding their writing voice? What makes this book so unique?
I think because it has a different arrangement in terms of thinking about writing and about life. And, you know, I'm just looking at some of the sphirot, like comprehension, bina. And in the book, I talk about something called pardes, which is, pardes means like paradise, but it also means, in Hebrew, it means field. But it's also like the mystical field, because it's a mystical place where four rabbis went into the pardes and they couldn't withstand the light there, and only one survived. But pardes is also an acronym for different levels of writing and different ways of like a hermeneutic for thinking about writing. So I think I want to talk about this model because I think it's a really beautiful model that could be used, you know, easily. And it's a very interesting way to think about writing and about analysis of any text, because pardes, it starts with pei in Hebrew, which it means pesach, which is the simple meaning. And the simple meaning is, let's say you're writing about a kitchen. So you're just describing the essential details of that kitchen. You know, the texture and the light and the knickknacks or the clock or the window. You're just describing like what's there, the details. But the next level is remez, which means what does it remind you of? So a kitchen, like from childhood, it could remind you of, or even your kitchen today, it could remind you of a friend's kitchen or an aunt's kitchen or a kitchen you read about in a book, or something that somebody wrote about cooking. Like, there's all kinds of possibilities to kind of reverberate from those concrete details. But so it's the simple meaning, then what does it remind you of? And then the third level is drash, which is meaning. And meaning is the theme, but you can also think of it as a kind of container. Like, what is it you're trying to say? And not necessarily in a didactic way, and not necessarily, and probably not moralizing, but what's the idea that you're coming up with from working with this? And then you can use principles of reflection, like repetition, where you just keep repeating something. Like, for example, you could repeat either every sentence or, you know, a few times in the essay, you know, the kitchen is where I, or my kitchen is where you, or, and then the last part of pardes is samach, which stands for sod, which is secret. And I think that's the most amazing part, is that the writing isn't complete until you have found an insight, something that you didn't know was there, so that there's a kind of revelation. And it's not until you've found that revelation, which is really what you can say about this that maybe nobody else has said in the way you're saying it, or something you didn't understand. And it's almost like a bird. It's something that just rises that you had no idea was going to show up. And so just those, you know, the spirit or a structure. So like Pardes is also a structure. It gives you like a place to hang your hat and a place to begin to write with, I would say to write without fear, because you have so many opportunities in this book to choose exercises and to choose aspects of the world and of spirituality that will stimulate you and motivate you to keep writing.
And I guess that idea of in the end, on the fourth layer, to find or to, it's like a treasure hunt, right? It's kind of exciting then to go after it. You don't feel like, oh, where's the grammar? And how could, you're like, what is it going to reveal? Where's the secret? I don't know. We come back to these words, intimacy, and to confide in something. Like, what is that secret of the kitchen? Or what is the secret inside why I love to wear my old flannel shirt with the big ripped pocket, or you know, whatever it is.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah. I'm having a hard time throwing out my pajama shirt that is all ripped. It's like I cannot get rid of it.
Well, I mean, writers are kind of famous for wearing these kind of overly big, baggy, soft, warm clothes that make us also feel like we're nestled in that beautiful bird nest. I think that we are, that we're comforted that when we write. And pajamas are, big flannel pajamas. Those are a good one. Do you think, Sherry, I mean, you've been doing this a long time, and you've gone from your first poetry class where you were probably, you know, wounded and had to get over those wounds to become a published author and to support so many people on their healing journeys and help so many people, just transform their lives through being able to find those personal stories and connect them then to bigger, expansive stories, the collective stories, as though they realize they're not so alone, right? That everybody has somehow had to go through the first day of school, and everybody had to maybe also fall in love and fall out of love and everything. So does that mean every single person can be a writer? Because I think that is a big dream for many people, to be able to write a book, to write a story, to put their name on something, to be heard, to be listened to. Is that your belief?
Yeah, well, you know, you're reminding me that this spirit, the root of the word is also close to the word for story in Hebrew. And also it's also connected to number and connected to sapphire, to a treasure. So I think that everybody has their own personal history. And of course, history has story in it, or her story. And this is something that we want to transmit, you know, that's just natural for us to want to transmit to others and for others to respond and to be changed by what we write. But it reminds me of, I have a friend named Jonathan Chernobyl, he died a couple of years ago. And he was about 87, and he had had a really interesting life. He'd been to Woodstock, and he was a cameraman, and he'd been to the Democratic Convention as a, you know, as a sound person. And he didn't have children until he was 50, and that's when he moved to Israel. And he was like a much older father than anybody around than the other fathers. And he knew he was dying, and we got the idea. I also write children's books, and we got the idea that we would write a children's book together for his grandchildren about him. And we called it Before You Were Born, and it was addressed to his grandchildren. And it was just, you know, a few of the stories of his life. But first of all, it was so much fun to do together. Even though we knew he was dying, we were laughing and having fun. I think there's something about sharing those stories, like confiding, that just brings a joy. And then knowing that he was going to be confiding those stories to his grandchildren, and that there would be continuity, there'd be a continuation of his, really, it's his life, but it was also of his soul speaking. So I think everybody has that desire that they're, what they've experienced in life, and even their soul speaking, because when we're talking about birds, it just feels like somehow birds are like the soul speaking, because there's some beauty about them. And I think there's beauty in every person's life, you know, there's failures too. And to be able to share all of that is, it's just, it feels to me like a way of healing, you know, ourselves, but healing the world. Because when other people read those stories, then they're not so alone. And it's, you know, I think of it as the world in a way is God's story. And maybe we're, I don't even know if we're pages in the book, we might just be letters. But when we let like our soul shine through, then maybe the story, you know, the story is a greater story or a clearer story or a story with more wisdom. I'm not sure. I haven't really thought it out completely, but I feel like there's something there.
Beautiful. Sherry, we're going to take a very, very short break. And now in this break, we're going to contemplate about all of these stories and how it's like a beautiful masterpiece, a jigsaw puzzle of humanity and what we're giving also our future generations.
Mm-hmm. Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. Today I am with the award-winning author, mother, and activist, Sherry Mandel, and we are talking about her wonderful new book, The Kabbalah of Writing, Mystical Practices for Inspiration and Creativity. And I was reflecting in the break, Sherry, how writers and singers and artists, it's like we are the bridge to the beyond. So I often share also that many of us are uncomfortable at times talking about death, but we're listening to many singers, for example, who have already passed, and they're in the present in our living rooms, in our cars, Maria Callas, Nina Simone. We're listening to Beethoven and Mozart. So what you were saying is so true, that we do leave our voice and a part of our soul and our essence, and the writers, it's the same when we read books from John O'Donohue or we read books of, you know, poetry and Walt Whitman and just beautiful things. We are able to not only connect with wisdom, but we're able to connect with a soul that is on the other side, but still here. That's pretty magical, right?
I have letters that my father wrote me where, I mean, he was not a writer, but his voice is so strong. They're very short letters, and it's really like, Daddy, you're here. I can feel you. So I think, you know, for everybody who's listening, yeah, some people want to write books and some people want to write essays, but it's also letters and emails where, I mean, I'm not sure about email because it's too easily erased, but a real letter to somebody can just make, can give such a point of contact between people, and that writing can do that, you know, can allow us to contact ourselves, but also to contact other people.
Yeah, there's something about longhand. That's a question that I would have for you. Do you write longhand or do you write at the computer? There's something for me about seeing my father's handwriting that connects me in a different way than if I would get an email from him. So do you tend to write
in
longhand?
Yeah, that's true. I used to teach college and I taught freshman composition. And I got carpal tunnel from grading many essays.
Can imagine.
For me, writing by hand is not so comfortable. But I know there is something to that handwriting thing. And I have friends who are poets who will not write on the computer, you know, that mm-hmm. they feel that the real energy comes through their hands.
Yeah, it's probably a mixture of both. I'm sure you can get the powerful intent and focus at the computer, but there is something magical about receiving a letter, a handwritten letter, which happens less and less nowadays, right? You talked a little bit about this. We're kind of coming to the close of this show, and I would love to, I'd love you to share some golden nuggets. You spoke that our writing practice can also not only serve for our own well-being, but can be an essential part of the world's spiritual evolution. And I love this thought. Before the show started, you were talking about events in Israel there was another terrorist attack. We know that there are wars happening. We know that there's hunger. We know of all these events that are so devastating. And yet we all have the potential to heal the world and to bring, to shift harm to harmony and to support each other. So what golden nuggets can you offer the voice, our writing voice, contributing to the world's spiritual evolution?
Yeah, well, I think when you're writing, you're given the opportunity for healing. And mm-hmm. so, you know, writing is a quest really for balance and for mm-hmm. harmony. Mm-hmm. And so even when you're harmed and damaged, there's a way that writing can come to heal you. Because when you can find imagery or use your imagination to sort of crawl out of that hole of pain and find imagery that will transform the imagery of the pain. You know, it's like what I was talking about with the cave and the bird's nest, mm-hmm. that there are ways of transforming imagery so that it can turn into healing imagery. And similarly, we have the opportunity to use language in a way that we can heal ourselves so that we can say, you know, I wish that, or I imagine that, or if only, or I wonder. So things that weren't possible at the time, let's say you had a bad experience, but when you're writing about them and you say, I wish that, or if only I had, or it could have been, then you open that possibility, and through language, that possibility then reverberates in your being, so that it's not that the past has changed, but you change your relationship to the past. And that kind of transformation, I think, can lead to healing, because then you're not angry. I mean, you're angry, but you're not going to let out your anger because you're open to imagination and curiosity and ultimately to compassion.
That sounds like we're powerful alchemists, right? Creative alchemy. That we're able to, yeah, with breath and our imagination, reframe, maybe rewrite some of the stories that hurt us from different perspectives, from different viewpoints. Exactly. You want to share a little bit more?
No, I was thinking of revision. You know, revisioning. But, I mean, we always use the word revision, but when you think of it, revision, to have the opportunity to really see into or see above or see through in a different way is really something that it speaks of renewal and rejuvenation.
Yeah, I love that. It's true that when we send in our work, our writing, we do get the first revision, second revision. It's a very fascinating thought. It's very expansive. It's better than editing. It's an expansive word, right? It was revised. It comes from vision. That's a beautiful word. Exactly.
Yeah,
if people want to get in touch with you, is it the KobeMundell.org, your foundation, where you're doing so much great work for our world? Is that your official homepage?
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's on KobeMundell.org/Sherry, Sherri hyphen Mandel, Mandell, or I'm on Facebook, Sherry Mandel, or on Instagram. People can get in touch with me.
Beautiful. And is there anything that you would love the listeners to take from your book while they're reading it? Is there anything special that you'd like them, you know, when they hold this in their hands and they start writing, to think about, to learn?
Well, I think just to remember that the spirit, that it's, you know, I said this, but that they're connected to the word for sapphire, that, you know, that they're treasures or gems, and everybody's story is like a treasure. And in a way, you have to protect it. And one way of protecting it is to write about it so that you can see it in its entirety, and it the writing becomes a container, really, to protect that story.
It's beautiful. All the facets. In German, you say also a treasure is a Schatz, and you all can say also that a person is a Schatz, mein Schatz, my treasure. And maybe the writing is that treasure chest of all of our stories. So thank you, Sherry, so much for being with us today at Voice Rising, for sharing your wisdom and your vision on writing, and for giving the writing community also a new book to work with. There are some classics out there, but I have to say I was very touched while reading your book to get new inspiration. I loved reading it. It put different spins on things I already knew, but in a way that, I guess for me, I'm walking the spiritual path, so I think if anybody out there wants to make art and writing part of their spiritual path, this is definitely the book to choose. That's what I would say.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you. You have a good evening, and may writing and everyone finding their authentic voices save the world and make it a better place. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, amen. We need it. Okay, good night.
Good night.